This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good afternoon. I'm Roshan Gunnison and welcome to Enterprise Explores, the show where we help you navigate the ever-changing universe of business from the headlines to the bottom line. Today, we're exploring 42 geeks. And no, we're not talking about 42 individual geeks or geeks who have the answer to the universe. 42 Geeks is an organization with a mission to foster cross-border tech collaborations and investments through the Global Geeks Tours. And they're currently on a tour which has taken them to Southeast Asia, specifically Jakarta, Singapore, Kuala Lumpur, and now the BFM 89.9 studios. With me here on the mic is Chok Ui, co-founder and chief geek. He's also senior partner at Agility.io. This is Agility.io was his first venture, and we spoke to him 10 years ago here at BFM. Since then, he went on to build Kenzie Academy, which was later acquired by Southern New Hampshire University in March 2021. And now he's on his third venture, 42 Geeks. Chok, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
And welcome back to Malaysia.
Always happy to be back.
So you've been away now for how long?
Oh my goodness, 25 years, a quarter century.
And so when you left, you left for university that time?
Yep.
And then you didn't turn back.
Well, the goal was to go for a couple of years, work a year or two and come back. And one thing led to the other and I'm not back since.
You know, we were taking a tour of the studio, Chok, and as we were walking around, I showed you some of the plaques that we have, and one of them is Lehman Falls. And you were telling me a little bit about how you were there during the time. I think you were at Goldman, is that right?
Yep, I was at Goldman Sachs working in structured credit. I was on the trading desk, so had a front row seat to all the carnage.
My God, how old were you when that happened?
Oh, wow. Don't remember. I think in my late 20s, I would say.
So you were in the finance space, and then eventually you entered the world of tech and entrepreneurship. I think a few things you've done in the past was back before the iPhone, you were involved in tech as well. Mm-hmm. I think AZ Mobile, if I'm getting that correct. A few other things along the way as well. But your first major success, I would say, would be Agility.io. Was that the big thing?
Yep. So after Goldman, there was a whole New York meltdown. So lost my job at Goldman. And then a young guy back then named Sam Altman hired me into his company called Looped. So I was one of his lead engineers, and that's how I got my foot into Silicon Valley. Little did I know that fast forward a couple of decades, Sam would create OpenAI and change the world.
My goodness. Did you know Sam Altman from before?
Yeah, I worked with him a lot before he was famous. Even my daughter spent a lot of time with him.
That's amazing. The more we're learning as we go through this. So we'll talk a little bit more about your background later as well, Chok. Get a bit of the insights and lessons you've learned along the way. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about 42 Geeks, right? So there's a little bit of a whirlwind tour that you guys do on a semi-regular basis. Tell us, what is 42 Geeks and what you guys are trying to do here?
So the original name for 42 Geeks was Geeks on a Plane. it was actually pretty famous. It was started by my partner, Dave McClure,
who was founder of 500 Startups.
He was at Founders Fund with Sean Parker and Peter Thiel.
Wow.
That was when he started Geeks on a Plane. So it's a group of geeks, we call ourselves, tech investors, VCs, successful founders and emerging founders. And we travel to different regions of the world, visiting with interesting tech ecosystems. And that usually leads to investments, partnerships, and a lot of things from there. And we just want to have a lot of fun doing it. So the trip kind of stopped about 7 years ago. And I rebooted it together with Dave back in 2022. And we rebranded it as 42 Geeks.
Dave, when you mentioned was part of Founders Fund. Now, this is a pretty big deal because being alongside Sean Parker and Peter Thiel is nothing to ignore, right? It's some rarefied air in the startup space in Silicon Valley. So 42 Geeks has been reborn 2022. Now you're doing a little bit of a Southeast Asia trip. When it was restarted, where did you guys go first?
Well, of course, coming from Southeast Asia, I'm a little biased over here. So we came to Southeast Asia as well in our first rebooted tour. But at that time, we went to Singapore, Bangkok, Ho Chi Minh, and then over to Bali because we have to put a beach in our
of course, Bali's great
destination. But since then, we've taken groups to the Middle East. We met with the Saudi Minister of Investment and also some of the very prominent companies in Dubai and Abu Dhabi. We went to South America. had dinner with the founders of Mercado Libre, which is the largest e-commerce.
Company. Amazon of South America.
That is right. So people were surprised. How do you guys get a meeting with them? We're like, well, a bunch of geeks invested in them when they were nobody. And so when they're successful, they remember us.
That was your 2022 trip?
2023. And then towards the end of 23, we took another group to East Asia. So we toured Taipei, Seoul, and Japan. So in Taipei, we were hosted by Steve Chen, the founder of YouTube, and Kevin Lin, the founder of Twitch. Funny enough, Steve, you know, before he became Steve and famous with YouTube, like he did web development work for Dave. So that's how the connections were. So based on the Geeks Network, this is how we're able to meet all these prominent people in tech.
It's really crazy to see how interconnected a lot of things are, and also how one crisis plays into long-term success in a different field, right? So the GFC left a lot of intelligent people, a lot of highly capable people without jobs in finance. And then we saw them move to tech. The last year obviously has been tough for the tech sector, a lot of layoffs. And we're starting to, I think some of the narratives we're seeing is that all this tech talent that maybe isn't don't have citizenships in the US might spread back, where go back to their home countries, and we could see those respective tech sectors bloom or take a leap forward. So now you're on, are these trips annual, semi-annual? Is there a regularity to it?
We usually do 2 or 3 trips a year. The challenge is there are so many countries and cities that are vying for us to go, and there's only so limited time. So everywhere we choose to go, we will offend someone else that we're not going.
Of course.
But yes, we try to be more strategic about where we're going. But we're excited about tech ecosystems that are booming or about to take off. And that's also why we're in KL this time. There is a lot happening here that in outside of Malaysia, it's probably not as prominent. And I want to make sure that the geeks get to see this up front before Malaysia kind of blows up as the new, another exciting tech ecosystem.
Now, we're recording this on Thursday, February 29th, and you are heading off back to the US tomorrow, correct?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And today, you and the geeks went over to Carsum's office. You've been to StoreHub as well. I think right now, as we're speaking, they're over at Bloom This. Mm-hmm. We just had Gideon on the show about 2 weeks ago. So you're getting to see some real range here in terms of what we do here. You were also at the Endeavor event yesterday. So you're getting to see the ecosystem quite a bit. And of course, let's not forget the Tech Nexus event that took place at the AWS office yesterday. Mm-hmm. You got to meet the minister, the digital ministry minister, Gobind Singh Dio. This current tour you're on is Jakarta, Singapore, and KL.
Yep.
Why these three particular destinations?
Well, other than Singapore, we didn't get to do Jakarta and KL last time. We did Bali, but Indonesian tech is also, you know, everyone's also talking about Indonesia. So it is a must stop for us. There's a lot happening there. And Singapore, as you know, if you come to Southeast Asia, that's kind of the heart of the region. So we have to stop by there as well. Although I have to say, Malaysia still has the much better food.
Thank you for saying that. You know, we have to admit that from a tech ecosystem perspective, yes, you got to go to Singapore, of course. But yeah, we still got the food. That's good to hear.
I told all the geeks not to eat too much in Singapore. Singapore and save up your appetite in KL.
Where have you taken the geeks to while you've been down?
So, you know, typically if they come on a tour, usually the tour guide would take them to very touristy places. So the first night we landed in KL, I took a bus load of geeks and we went to Ming Tian in Bandar Utama.
Wonderful.
I should have never seen a large coach pull up with all a bunch of different foreigners coming down to eat at Ming Tian before, but they love the food.
And I understand that Chen Chao of Fave, co-founder of Fave, is hosting you while you're in town. Is that correct?
Yes. So Chen Chao, we like to call him CC, is one of our geeks in 2022. He came on our geek trip.
Wonderful.
And we said if we do Malaysia, he has to host us. And he has indeed connected us to all the right people here.
Chok, we'll talk a little bit about the ecosystem and what else you've been observing here in Malaysia while you've been in town and some of the experiences you've gotten while you're here on this three-day trip, 3 days in each of the cities. So whirlwind tour. Indeed. Folks, you're listening to Enterprise Explores, the show where we help you navigate the ever-changing universe of business from the headlines to the bottom line. And today, we're exploring 42 Geeks, an organization with a mission to foster cross-border tech collaborations and investment through global geek tours. And they're currently in Kuala Lumpur and now in the BFM studio. I'm Roshan Ganesan. We'll be back in just a bit. So keep it here at BFM 89.9, the business station.
Backing female ministers. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to Enterprise Explores, the show where we help you navigate the ever-changing universe of business from the headlines to the bottom line. Today, we're exploring 42 Geeks, an organization with a mission to foster cross-border tech collaboration and investments through their global geek tours. And the current tour has taken them to Southeast Asia, specifically Jakarta, Singapore, Kuala Lumpur, and now the BFM tour. With me in the studio is Chok Ui, co-founder and chief geek of 42 Geeks. He's also the senior partner of another company he founded, Agility.io. Chok, earlier we talked a little bit about, you know, a little bit of your background, a little bit about what 42 Geeks is and this the aims, right? It's just to go and see what else is happening around the world and not miss, I guess, avoid any potential FOMO that you could see in the where in terms of developments across the world. Right now, you're in town. You've been here for, this is your second day right now. You landed yesterday.
The day before.
Yeah. So you had a full day yesterday.
Yep.
And you're heading off tomorrow. And just again, a reminder, it's February 29th right now as we record this in the studio while you are here. What have your observations been of the ecosystem while you've been in town? I mean, you've had a few interactions. Obviously, you can't make a full-on judgment, of course. But, you know, what has caught your attention? What's been interesting? And what have the engagements been like on the ground?
So first, I'd like to say that everyone talks about Silicon Valley and try to emulate Silicon Valley. We actually believe that's wrong. Mm-hmm. We feel like the best innovations the next few decades is going to be outside of Silicon Valley. So our first objective is to come and learn from all the entrepreneurs and the investors here doing interesting things in the region. And hopefully we can build some relationship and connections from there that may result in investments, that may result in partnerships, or just friendship that, you know, we can help each other out.
And the part of the vibe I got from speaking to some of your geeks yesterday was that fun is a big part of the of this, right? It's going and exploring different regions of the world while also doing a little bit of recce in terms of what's going on there.
Oh, definitely. Having fun is definitely a whole part of it. We have some very successful founders and investors in the group, but when we're together, we are like a bunch of school tour group.
That's usually what happens when you bring a bunch of peers together, right? You kind of regress to a particular, more chilled version, if that's the vibe that you're going for. While in town, have you been able to speak to any potential partners, any potential startups here that have particularly caught your attention? Obviously, you don't have to name any names here, but what has caught your attention here?
Well, we visited Carson today. The geeks were actually very impressed because when we hear a business model like Carson, we think about Kavana, who's not doing very well in the US. But then when we start digging into it, it's like, wow, Carson is not nothing like Carvana. It's doing so many things more. It's actually solving the right problems. And the CEO of Carson gave us an intro of the company. Eric's also a fellow DJian, which is where I went to school, go DJ. the other companies, every company we met here has been pretty impressive. And I think the geeks have definitely learned a lot from such a short time here.
Have they enjoyed themselves enough to want to come back sometime with another geek tour here?
I think some of them are extending their stay by a couple of days, but definitely, I think every trip we do see people either falling in love with the ecosystem, the place, the people, and coming back. That is the goal of the trip, is to introduce them to Malaysia, to Kuala Lumpur, mm-hmm. Hopefully get them excited about the ecosystem and come back and make more connections here.
And if, you know, someone's listening to this and they think they could be a potential partner, right? If maybe they can host you the next time they're in town. How can they get in touch with 42 Geeks in any particular way?
Go to our website, 42geeks.com. We have a form that says become a host. You are more than welcome to submit your proposal and we'll evaluate it. And if it's the right proposal, hopefully we can you can host us next time we're here in KL or wherever you want us to go.
Wonderful. Chok, I want to talk a little bit about you now. Mm-hmm. We gave a bit of an introduction earlier on, but you are a Malaysian boy who's gone abroad and done some big things. You've also been through a lot, right? You were in the GFC you went on. You had to move again from New York to Silicon Valley. And while it's the same country, they are vastly different places across. They border different oceans. talk to us a little bit about your journey, right? What have been some of the key lessons you've learned since going to the US from your time in Goldman and to your time starting 42 Geeks? It's a long time frame, I know, but some of the things have stood out.
So I'm a PJ boy, very proud of it.
Yeah, PJ.
And every time overseas, people are like, you know, where in China are you from? And like, no, I'm Malaysian. Always Malaysian first to set the record straight. So yes, I went to the States back in 1999 for college and never came back. So got my first job into Bank of America and then subsequently to Goldman Sachs lost my job in the crash of 2008. Mm-hmm. I was at Structured Credit sitting on a trading desk and AIG was actually one of my desk's counterparty.
Ouch.
So had a lot of as a young 20-some-year-old seeing all that happening, not really understanding the big picture back then, it was quite an experience. So I remember I lost my job the day Obama got elected. But luckily enough, like I said, I got a job offer from a company called Looped, run by Sam Altman, and then that was my first foray. Definitely a big culture differences. I was kind of a engineer on the desk building trading systems. At Wall Street, the traders were valued higher than the engineers. But when you get to Silicon Valley, the engineers will value higher. We actually have private offices, which is pretty cool. but the culture is also very different. But also, if you turn the clock back in 2008, it was not sexy to be a founder or to work at a startup back then. Many people don't remember. This was pre-Facebook IPO, pre-Twitter IPO and everything. A few years after that, when we did the Geeks trips around the world, especially if you come to Asian countries, Asian parents would say, you know, go be a doctor, lawyer, everything. A startup founder never made the list. so if you're a startup founder, I think your mother-in-law is definitely very unhappy with you. But a lot has changed since then.
Now, Looped was acquired by Green Dot, if I have that correct, which is an American fintech and bank holding company. Looped was your foray into tech, if I have that.
Into Silicon Valley.
Into
yes.
Silicon Valley. You were already in tech in Goldman, mm-hmm. right? You were an engineer already, so you weren't on the finance side of the equation over there. Mm-hmm. Could you give us a little bit of color in terms of, you know, a lot of us see Silicon Valley through the movies, through what we read. But as a Malaysian boy, you, a PJ boy who went to New York, you studied, and then you had to move again to Silicon Valley. What was that experience like? We hear a lot of different things from San Francisco having its own stereotypes about it. What's the valley like?
So growing up as a kid in Malaysia, in the 90s, we all looked up to, Bill Gates with Microsoft. It was the kind of the big thing back then. So I always had a dream of either going to work on Wall Street or Silicon Valley. Little did I know I end up in both places through the way of layoffs. I think, you know, people look at all these companies and founders and think they're like demigods, you know, doing the impossible. But in fact, they're mortal. They're regular people just like us. The only advantage Silicon Valley has over, for example, Malaysia or KL, is that they started doing this decades before us. So their first generation of companies, the semiconductor industry pretty much were successful. And then the founders went on to mentor and fund the second generation, which went on to support the third and fourth generation. So if you look at Malaysia today, we had kind of our first gen of companies. Some of them have IPO. People say grab a Singapore. I still say it's a Malaysian company run by Malaysians. and Carsum, which is our first fully Malaysian unicorn. I am very confident that if you fast forward next couple of years to the decade, these companies, people who work here at Carsum, at Grab, will go on to found the next generation of companies, invest in those companies, and that, give it some time, and we will see a very vibrant tech ecosystem in Malaysia.
Chuck, I want to spend a bit of time here because this is really important, right, for people to understand the multi-generational nature of developing a tech ecosystem. Mm-hmm. In Silicon Valley, we go back to HP in Hewlett and Packard and what they did for the ecosystem. Mm-hmm. Without them, they wouldn't be Apple and Microsoft and so on and so forth.
It was the military spending, the military research first then, which led to that. And then hardware infrastructure, then Microsoft, and then, the internet.
So it was seeded through, as you point out, military spending, which is government.
Yes.
And then generations later, we've got Silicon Valley at where it is today. Why is it important to have these multi-generational entrepreneurs and founders, and how can we, I guess, what would be the way Malaysia can go about doing that?
So to build an ecosystem like that, you need a spark. And sometimes the private sector can provide that spark. Sometimes you need governments to put in the right policy or support in place. And in many ecosystems around the world, usually the governments are the first ones that starts the spark and then hand the baton over to the private sector to move from there. Like I said, it's all muscle memory and institutional knowledge. Once someone has gone through the pain of building a billion or multi-billion dollar company, they have experienced all kinds of fire, trial by fire, and those are very valuable experiences that you want to preserve and pass on to the next generation of founders. And as you do more and more of that, the next generations become more efficient at what they do. They make less mistakes, and hopefully they can grow the companies a lot faster. And if you follow the trend of companies, right, from the Microsoft days all the way to the Netscapes and then the Facebooks and everything, these companies are getting to billion-dollar valuations a lot faster mm-hmm. than their predecessors.
Now, what's also really important about that multi-generational element is that you have people who understand the space, right? So a founder who builds a company, IPOs it or gets it sold, then has the capital to then reinvest in other founders mm-hmm. who has a better understanding, empathy of that ecosystem. And then you have that trickle-down effect, right? So like in Malaysia, Job Street, for example, yep. was a big thing. Malik, our founder at BFM, Malik Ali, was also second generation, or he was part of the founding team, but wasn't the first, he wasn't the founders. And you have, there's like the... It's not the PayPal mafia, but you know what I mean. It's kind of...
The Job Street mafia.
The Job Street mafia, right? And then that kind of trickled down to other things. And I think that's what a lot of people are hoping from your Qasims and your Aerodynes today, that they get to a certain point where that trickle down will eventually happen.
But these founders have to pay it forward. They can't just, you know, make the money, buy an island and disappear. They have to come back, actively invest. But what's more important than money is mentorship and advice. That is the most important, I would say, thing going into a company. If for them to be able to be willing to meet with the next gen founders and spend time and coach them and show them you know, a couple of tricks here and there, that is critical for this ecosystem to grow and continue to thrive. That's the part you see in Silicon Valley. You know, it's people don't realize, even when I got there in 2008, 2009, you can reach out to almost anybody there and say, can we have coffee and grab like 15, 20 minutes of your time? And that's very common. There's a very high likelihood someone who's very important or successful would say yes.
Wow.
If they like the conversation, a 15-minute coffee may turn into a three-hour brainstorm session, which is very, very common. And if you just, all you have to do is sit in a cafe in Silicon Valley and you can hear all sorts of pitches and ideas that's going around. Malaysia, KL, never had that like 10, 15 years ago when I came back. But today, we see the same thing here. I'm sure sitting in any fancy hippie cafes around KL and Bangsar and PJ, I'm sure you will hear some startup pitches.
And that this paid forward mentality is super important, not just in the money and the capital that the founders who've made it can provide, but the insights and as you've pointed out there. And that's what our friends over at Endeavor at yesterday's event are trying to do, right? It's a global organization. It's trying to help people with mentorship and all of that. Now, could you maybe tell us a little bit about how this paid forward mentality helped you when you built? Because again, you've built three businesses, or you've built two, and you're building a third now. How did this paid forward mentality help you in your journey at Silicon Valley?
So a lot of people go to Silicon Valley and say, I want to be a founder, I want to be CEO, I want to start a company. I always thought that I was an executive. I was thriving to be an executive. But after spending time with a lot of founders and going skiing with them and playing cards with them, you catch the startup bug. you know, it's pretty contagious. But I hung out with the co-founders, for example, the co-founders of Playdom. Everyone knows Zynga, people who used to play Mafia Wars and everything.
Yep.
Playdom pretty much copied all their games, but on MySpace when it was still a thing back then. So they kind of saw an opportunity and went there, and then they sold to Disney for $500 million. So one example was the founders of Playdom. Same thing. I just get to know them and learn from them. I asked for coffee, and they took me on a ski trip and spent a lot of time with them. And similar other founders as well. I learned a lot from Sam when I used to work for him. And a lot of people at Looped, which we work on, went on to start pretty successful companies as well. Some went on to become VCs at Greylock Partners and other prominent places. And from our Loop connection, I get to meet Gary Tan, who is, you know, today head of Y Combinator as well. So that's how those connections happen. And they were all very generous with their times to mentor. And therefore, I try my best to do the same as well.
And hopefully with 42 Geeks, you can spread that connection on a global scale. Mm-hmm. Now, from Looped, talk to us about how that led you to agility.io and then Kenzie after that.
Yeah, I had a short stopover at a consulting company in New York. That's how they got. I moved back to New York after Looped. But a lot of my startup friends that have ran successful companies, at that time, Facebook, Twitter, a lot of those companies started going IPO. So the cost of engineers just shot up many, many times. Mm. So a lot of my friends had trouble hiring good engineers. And back then, it was very unsexy to outsource. So I had been connected to my partner in Vietnam for another project, and they heard about the Vietnam connection. So they said that, hey, if you lead the projects, we would quietly outsource to you without telling our investors. You know, fast forward 15 years. Today, if you tell your investor, I cannot find engineers, they're like, have you looked at outsourcing? If you look at all the different options that are available to you. So that was how I started. Just people I hung out with and giving me my first few opportunities. Our first ever client, we started with a team of 10 people. The model of Agility was it is very expensive, very hard to find good engineers in Silicon Valley. So we went all the way to Vietnam and we hired mid to senior level engineers and we retrained them for 7 months because back then Vietnam's wages were still pretty affordable. So we get them to be to write code as good as a senior engineer in Silicon Valley, but at a third the price. That was a secret sauce. Nothing fancy about it. And it worked for us. We started serving a lot of my friends, and from there, word of mouth, fast forward 15 years, today we are 400 engineers strong in Vietnam. We've helped build almost 300 startups, not just in Silicon Valley, but around the world. And out of those 300, 7 of them became unicorns, 5 of the 7 went IPO the last 2 years. So we are able to work with many startups from, you know, some of them at the really founder stage and seeing them go through that growth trajectory all the way to exit.
Chalk, we got to go into a few more messages. When we come back, I want to pick your brain a little bit about your experience, because you've agility.io is still ongoing, but you exited from Kenzie Academy. It was acquired by university. I want to just dive into that a little bit more before we run out of time, actually. Folks, I've been speaking with Chalk Oi. He's the co-founder and chief geek of 42 Geeks, an organization with a mission to foster cross-border tech collaboration and investments through the Global Geeks Tours. He's in the studio because they're currently on a tour here in Southeast Asia, which is coming to an end tomorrow. I'm Roshan Gunnison. This is Enterprise Explores. We'll be back in just a bit. So keep it here to BFM 89.9, the business station.
Beating fickle mindsets. BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to Enterprise Explores, the show where we help you navigate the ever-changing universe of business from the headlines to the bottom line. I'm Roshan Gunnison, and today I'm speaking with Chalk Oi. He's the co-founder and chief geek at 42 Geeks and senior partner at agility.io. We're talking to him because 42 Geeks is an organization with a mission to foster cross-border tech collaborations and investments through the Global Geeks Tours, where they take tours to different parts of the world, and their current tour has them in Southeast Asia. They went Jakarta, Singapore, Kuala Lumpur, and now in the BFM studio. Earlier on, we explored what 42 Geeks is and what they're trying to do, and cross, again, going to different parts of the world and learning from them and kind of getting the feel and the vibe for what's going on around the world in the tech scenes. Now we're diving into a bit of Chok's own history and his experience. He's a PJ boy, a proud PJ boy from DJ High School, and has gone on to build two companies. He's building his third one, was in the middle of the Lehman crash, the global financial crisis. Chok, let's talk a little bit about a little bit more about the businesses you've built, right? So you were telling me earlier, Agility.io is basically filling that gap for, let's call them cost-effective engineers in Silicon Valley. Kenzie, how did that happen? So was this concurrent with Agility.io, or did you take a step back? Or what was it like?
I always joke that I like to start companies, but I hate running them. so I think 6 years into Agility, when the business was starting to take off and doing well, I stepped down as CEO to start Kenzie Academy. And the whole thesis was, Silicon Valley was having a hard time finding tech talent. People are looking overseas there. And then I said, why don't we look at America's backyard? And that's the Midwest.
So it's a bit of a follow-up from Agility. Yep.
Trying to replicate what we did in Vietnam in the middle, we call it middle America. So those cities, there are the Rust Belt cities where manufacturing has left and people have lost hope and lost jobs. And the whole thesis was, what if we bring the right kind of training to the workforce and turn auto workers, steel workers into software engineers and help solve the talent shortage in tech? So that was how Kenzie Academy started.
And you eventually sold that over to Southern New Hampshire University. Tell us a bit about the experience of exiting a company.
yep, lots of rookie mistakes. So we, Kenzie, we did pretty well. It's all project-based learning. I've got a lot of instructors from Silicon Valley, ex-Facebook, ex-LinkedIn people that create the curriculum and teach the programs. And we raised a lot of money, too much in hindsight. We raised about $122 million total, $100 million in debt fund and $22 million in equity. Wow. And I think the reason behind that was we were targeting people who were at the bottom economy. They can't afford to pay for the program. They have no credit to get loans. So we use something called income share agreement, where you do the program for free. And if and only if you get a job making over a certain threshold, you pay back. And then we use the fund to be able to fund the operations. And COVID happened, and the bottom of the population were very hard hit in the States. So we had to find, our unit economics pretty much broke down. So we had to find the right home for Kenzie. We had two acquisition offers, and we picked Southern New Hampshire because it is very aligned with our mission, even though it's a smaller acquisition than the other. And the proposition was they are a university, they can make our program accredited, and therefore our students can access a lot of grants granted by the government.
So when you say small acquisition here, it was a smaller deal. So you left money on the table, but you wanted to find a good home for Kenzie.
That is right. Wow. One of the deal was a PE firm, and the other one was a nonprofit university. And I started Kenzie. It was a mission-driven organization, so it is just I would never consider just taking more money just for the sake of sacrificing the mission. Glad it found the right home. But that was the first time I ever took a company through the sale process, which was extremely stressful. If you think buying your house and going through all the documentation and mortgages was stressful, this is like 100 times worse. I learned a lot on how to structure future deals, how do you negotiate, how to protect yourself, I've also sat on two boards of companies since that I've guided the CEOs to an exit. So I've applied a lot of what I learned from the Kenzie exit and have guided companies.
What are some key lessons regarding exit, right? Because, I mean, obviously now the environment's very different from 2021. A lot of people are finding it a bit difficult to exit. The ecosystem's a bit of a downturn. But from your experience and from the experience you've had coaching other people, what are some key lessons that founders need to keep in mind when it comes to exits?
Know your acquirer. And the first thing you should do is talk to other CEOs, which that organization has acquired. What was the experience with them? What was the experience during the negotiation, during the purchase process? What is it like? How was it like to integrate into the organization post-acquisition? Do your homework. Very, very important. And then the second one is also sometimes there are things that are terms that are important to founders and you say, we'll figure it out post-acquisition. No, you have it down on paper. Make sure everything is negotiated up front because things, you know, what you expect after the acquisition may not be what you get. So always be, you know, everything that you're expecting, make sure it's very clearly spelled out during the negotiation process. And, you know, when you have a smaller organization getting acquired by a much larger organization, usually the small organization, you don't have as much time as they do. You're burning your run rate and things like that. And the larger acquirer can always sit and wait patiently. I would say make sure that you have you know, clear expectations, and when it's time to walk away, you walk away, or you know, make sure that you negotiate from a position of strength.
And what do you wish you knew, or what do you think found? What do you wish someone told you when you first made your move to start Agility.io when you were a first-time founder?
Actually, a lot of people say it was a stupid idea because, you know, right from the outside, it just looks like an outsourced development shop. But our real differentiation was the training program that we put in place. And that was our secret sauce in allowing us to grow over the years. But we were serving startups. A lot of other companies like ours were serving bigger corporations because steady cash flows, startups tend to go out of business usually 80-90% of the time. We saw that there was an opening where there were less competition, and I was always like less competition, and that's, we went after it. We learned that yes, startups do fail, but if you do a very good job for the startup founder, there's a high chance he or she is going to then start a next company, whether they're successful or not, with the first venture. And they're always the first one. We're always the first one they will call whenever they do that. We also realize that sometimes once they get acquired, the acquirer becomes our client, or they may fold or sell one company and went on to join companies like Google and Uber and other places. That was why Google was one of our clients. We built, people don't realize our team in Vietnam built a lot of Google web pages.
Wow.
We did things for Bose. We did things for Starbucks Reserve. We have other major companies as well. It's because startup founders become very desirable after a couple of years going through the fire, and other small, medium, large companies are all, you know, fighting for them.
Lessons from building multiple startups, just as we come to, as we start to land this plane with a geek. Third company on the go right now. Lessons as a serial entrepreneur that maybe people don't pay enough attention to.
Don't let success get into your head.
Mm.
The first company was a total luck. I accidentally did everything right. So I thought, wow, a second company should be easier. Second company did everything wrong, but still managed to find a soft landing for it. So third company, a lot more humble. You have to focus on sales. You have to focus on unit economics. Get it right very early on. Second company, we were going through the whole blitz scaling thing. If people remember, just a couple of years ago, companies were just burning money to buy market share and beat up and choke off your competitors. We were in that mode. We raised a lot of money, burned a lot of money every single month, trying to be, you know, the top player in there. And when the funding environment changed, all this went away. Suddenly, there's an attention to unit economics, profitability, EBITDA, which is a foreign language to most founders.
It's one of the questions I ask all founders nowadays.
And EB what?
And to wrap up, talk to us a little bit about your long-term aims for 42 Geeks, the company that you're currently building, or the organization that you're currently building.
So I always say I like to start companies. I hate running them. So it's been almost 2 years with 42 Geeks. The company is almost close to break even, doing well. We have a lot of prominent people on the trip. So I've just announced that I'm stepping down as Chief Geek. Our May trip to Eastern Europe is going to be the last trip I'm leading and handing off to the right person that could take it to the next level so that I could then go on to start another company.
So maybe another lesson as we wrap up here is know what you're good at. If you're a builder, build. And if you're a manager, manage, which is something that you've, I guess, learned over time.
Yeah, I think one critical lesson for founders is to be very self-aware, to know what your weaknesses are and strengths are, and leverage the heck out of your weaknesses, your strengths, and knowing to find the right partners or employees for your weaknesses, and also knowing when to hand it off to the right people.
So, Chok, you're going to be handing over the reins here. Is there anything you'd like to say before we wrap up for today?
Yes. So 42 Geeks, or our predecessor, Geeks on the Plane, was pretty much a group that brings Silicon Valley to visit the rest of the world. But we're so proud that over time we've evolved to our groups are now very, very global. So we still have a lot of people coming from Silicon Valley, but today we have people from all over the world. On this tour, we have people from Saudi Arabia, Hong Kong, different parts of the Middle East, Philippines, Japan on the tour. And as we visit interesting cities, we identify interesting founders and we invite them on the next trip. So that's where we see where the world is headed. Silicon Valley no longer being the innovation that pushes out products to the around the world. We see innovation happening all around the world. And this is a very exciting future.
Chok, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you. Thank you so much for giving us some of your time while you're in town.
Thank you so much.
Folks, I was speaking with Chok Ui, co-founder and chief geek of 42 Geeks. They're an organization with a mission to foster cross-border tech collaborations and investments through the Global Geek Tours. And they're currently their current tour has them in Southeast Asia. They were in Jakarta, Singapore, and they're wrapping up their tour here in Kuala Lumpur and heading back over to the US or their respective homes tomorrow. It is now February 29th. We are pre-recording this. I'm Roshan Karnison. This has been Enterprise Explores, the show where we help you navigate the ever-changing universe of business from the headlines to the bottom line. Keep it here to BFM 89.9, the business station.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.